I had PTSD. Once I was back from Iraq, I was distant from everybody in my family.
We had a reunion of our unit, and you'd hear these spouses say, "Is your husband doing that? My husband's doing that too. I thought it was just us." And really understanding that, hey, this is a common experience.
I learned more to listen to what he was saying, and that made it easier for me to understand where his pain was coming from.
Resources are available for military families. Learn more at realwarriors.net.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. ...905 here on the West Coast, 1205... Everybody having lunch on the East Coast. In the middle of the both coasts is the state of Louisiana. Joining me from Louisiana is Carrie Riley. Carrie, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. First of all, thanks for taking time out of your day and coming on the radio.
Thanks for having me.
All right. First of all, Carrie, we need to know about you. So let's talk about you. Born and raised where?
Born and raised in California, moved to Fort Knox, Kentucky.
Okay, hold on. I'm not done with California. So born and raised in in what part of the greatest state of the country?
I was born in Newport Beach, California.
Ooh.
Lived in California till 2010.
2010. So you grow up, you essentially grew up in California, in Southern California?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, really? So that means you're like a happening chick, right?
I guess so.
Exactly. By birthright you are. Come on, get with the program.
So, I am pretty awesome.
All right. So how do you go from Southern California to Kentucky? Okay, so hold on. So you graduate from high school where?
I graduated from high school in Norco High in Norco, California in 1988.
Norco High. And then what do you do when you get out of high school?
I had a job at a grocery store. I've had a couple of jobs. I worked at an animal hospital in Corona, California for about 13 years.
Okay. So, wow. So you do that. And that takes you up to what year? So that's 2001?
Yeah. Moved to Bakersfield, California, worked as a dog groomer out there, and then I met my husband, Sean, met him online, actually.
Yikes!
He was his first tour in Iraq, I think it was 2004. We met on a website and just became friends, and then it kind of developed from there, and we ended up getting married in 2008 when he came home. He had been injured in Iraq, came home, and they put him at the Warrior Transition Unit in Fort Knox. I stayed living in California with my mom because he had to live in the barracks, and it was just cheaper that way.
At Fort Knox. So you meet online. Right, you get married.
We did. We got married in Las Vegas, actually.
Yeah.
In the drive-thru. Yes.
No way.
Drive-thru? He was home. Yeah, he was home on convalescent leave because he had surgery on his ankle. He rolled his ankle really bad in Iraq.
Okay, so hold on. This is a lot for me to digest. All right, so you're in Bakersfield. You guys meet online.
Yeah.
When did you guys first meet in person?
I met him online in 2004, and probably like 4 months afterwards when he came home on leave from Iraq, he came to my house.
So he walks up to your house and you guys say, "Hi, how you doing?"
Yeah. I mean, well, we had talked for probably 6 months before he came to my house.
Wow.
So, I mean, you know, you learn a lot about a person. That was when he was actually at Abu Ghraib. And he would call me every night on his breaks. So every night, 3 o'clock in the morning, my time, we talked for, he maybe took a little bit longer break than he was supposed to, but we talked on the phone every night, wrote letters back and forth, Skype, So, I mean, I knew him. I just hadn't physically been in front of him. And then I was supposed to go to, because he was from Massachusetts, and I was supposed to go to Massachusetts, but his father died, so and he ended up coming out to see me and for 2 weeks, and then I went to Massachusetts afterwards after his father's funeral.
Okay, let me give you a little an opinion of mine. I think you can get to know somebody, an awful lot about somebody, if they write to you, because they tend to write things that they think, whereas when you're with somebody, you know, they'll, like, you'll write, you know, I was looking at a picture, and what a beautiful smile, and, you know, and they'll write things they're thinking about, and where, when you're with somebody every day, I don't know that you can communicate like that, so I think you can grow when you're apart. Just as much, sometimes more in different ways than you do when you're together. What do you think?
Totally, because we talked through Yahoo Messenger his whole deployment, and so we got to know each other. I mean, he was my best friend.
Really?
Before there was anything romantic, he was my best friend. That's how close we got.
Skype sucks, though, because the internet connections come and go, right?
Yeah, it did suck.
But it's the only game in town. It's the only way you can do it, though. dependent on the kind of internet access you have at your camp. I mean, if it sucks, there's no Skype. You know.
Yeah. Well, we did a lot just through Yahoo Messenger.
Right.
So like, and I worked at an animal hospital. And so my work knew about him, so they would give me, like, they would give me a break when he would come on. So I might have had an hour, extra long hour break. They were pretty cool about that.
Hey, support the troops, man. It means it means more than send us socks and powder. Hello. I've got an email for you. Mac, this is awesome. I want to hear about the wedding in the drive-thru. I don't know anybody that's ever done that. So, all right. So, you guys, he comes to Bakersfield, right?
Yeah. Well, no. I had ended up moving to my mother's house. This was after we had gotten together.
Okay. So you guys know each other. And where's your mom living?
Mama lives in Redlands.
In Redlands. Okay. That's like Riverside, California, on the east side of L.A.
Inland Empire. Yeah.
The Inland Empire.
San Bernardino.
Yeah, and it gets smoggy. It gets smoggy out there, okay, folks, just so you know.
Smoggy and hotter than hell.
Exactly.
Yes.
So
I lived with my mom.
Right.
And he had gotten hurt. He had rolled his ankle on his first tour in Iraq. And by the time I lived with my mom, he was already on his second tour. He had volunteered for another tour. So he had rolled his ankle the first tour, and it just gotten progressively worse. And plus, he had shoulder injuries and hernia and other injuries from being blown up in the Husky.
Right. Okay. So hold on. So he just we'll talk about Sean's tour right now. Just kind of. He's.
Well, no, I'm leading up to it. He came home on convalescent leave because he had surgery on his ankle. We would see each other. This sounds so bad. We would see each other on his convalescent leave. So okay. I would either go out there for his surgery, or he would come out to California. So we went
Hold on, and he's in Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah.
Okay, now, but I need you to stop. He's at Fort Knox. But he joins the Army in what year?
He joined the Army in 1988. All right. Became a Ranger.
And he's with the Rangers. He jumps into Panama.
Yes, sir.
During Operation Just Cause.
Yes, sir.
All right, so he jumps into Panama, and he loves being a Ranger, right?
Yes.
Rangers,
loved it.
Rangers lead the way, right?
Yep. His nickname was Ranger Smurf.
Okay. I'm sure he loved that.
Well, because he was only 5'5", and he was a Ranger, so they called him Ranger Smurf. And he had a big Ranger tattoo on his back.
All right, so then, and so he goes to Iraq as a Ranger, right?
No, he had actually he served like 20-something years and got tired of how the new Army started becoming.
Okay.
So he got out, and then he was out for not even a year.
He gets out in what year?
I want to say, this was before I knew him, so I want to say it was like 2002 or 3.
Okay.
And then that's when all the crap started hitting the fan, so he decided he wanted to go National Guard.
Right.
So this is all before I knew him. He lived in Massachusetts, so he went National Guard and signed up for deployment.
Okay.
And then that's when I met him, was on his first deployment. He did two deployments with the National Guard.
All right. And was he with the last one?
Was
he with the route clearance unit? Was he with the route clearance unit both deployments?
No. The first deployment he was at Abu Ghraib.
Okay.
At the
prison?
Yeah. He was there before all that stuff happened.
Oh.
They actually left right before that stuff happened.
Good thing.
And then he came home, and I want to say he was home maybe 8 months, and they went back again. And he was with the 181.
The 181, and that's when he was doing route clearance stuff.
Yes, yes.
Okay. All right. So now everybody's up to snuff on Sergeant Sean Riley, okay? So that's who we're talking about here. So he's back from his second deployment. His ankle that he has chronic issues with, he's having surgery. You guys are like going back and forth. And now let's talk about the drive-through wedding in Vegas. So,
they had him. He was in the warrior transition unit because he had gotten blown up several times in the Husky.
All right, explain
so
to everyone.
We're living together.
All right, so okay, we got that straight. You guys are good people. You're not living together. What? And so the warrior transition unit. What is that? I mean, that's an army thing. I don't know what it is.
It's for when the. Well, I can't really say what he used to call it online, but it was for when the guys get hurt over in Iraq.
Hold on, let me guess.
Send them to.
Starts with an F.
No.
Oh.
Can I say it?
No.
Can I say it? It's not. Well, he called them the broke.
Oh, okay.
Broke.
Starts with.
Anyway,
okay.
The broken,
starts with a D.
The broke starts with a D. Yes.
Ends with a K.
So he. Yes. He
but,
was,
but essentially, guys that
Alpha
are broken.
Company. Yes. And what they do is they live there in the unit, in the battalion. They had Alpha Company and Bravo Company. And what they do is they have like three floors in each building. And they pretty much shuttle the guys to their medical appointments. That's the reason why I stayed living in California, is because he was assigned to the Warrior Transition Unit, he had to have them take him to his appointments.
Right.
So it was kind of dumb for me to live in California, rent a house, because we hadn't bought a house yet,
right,
and then him having to live there. So
okay.
He would come home on leave, or I would go see him. Well, he came home to me, and I think he was supposed to be out there for a week. And I lived in Redlands, which is 4 hours from Las Vegas, and he had an itch to go gamble. And he was on crutches with a cast on his foot, and I have a Jeep. So we drove 4 hours to Vegas. The air conditioner went out in my Jeep.
Nice.
It was 120 degrees out. Yes, I have a cranky old little angry midget sitting next to me with a cast on his foot. And the first night we went and gambled. And then 5 o'clock in the morning, he asked me to marry him. And so we went. He didn't have a ring or anything. Yeah. He didn't have a ring or anything.
All
so
right.
We went to this outdoor mall. Poor guy had to walk on crutches. His armpits were raw. His foot was swollen. Got rings. And then he said, well, let's wait because my foot's swollen. Well, I told him no. I said, I'm spending my wedding night in Vegas. So we drove and we found the little white wedding chapel, which is pretty popular. It's, you see it in the movies and everything.
Really?
And we went inside, and there was like a three-hour wait, and he said, there's no way I can do it. So I said, I know, let's go through the wedding, or the drive-thru. We were going to have Elvis marry us, but Elvis was on lunch break. So we sat in my Jeep for 20 minutes in the line, and the pastor hung out the window like he was selling us a Happy Meal.
Really?
And we got married in my Jeep. Yes, we got married in my Jeep.
So what paper? That's awesome. So what papers do you have to fill out? Do you have to... So
you have to go get a wedding license. It's just like if you go get married anywhere else.
Okay, so
you just go get a wedding license.
Where'd you get the? He decides at 5 in the morning. Where do you get the wedding license?
You go in Vegas. They have I don't even know what it's called, the courthouse or whatever.
Right.
And you stand in line, and the line is huge because right. everybody wants to get married in Vegas.
Right.
So, yeah.
so he goes and stands in that line. He gets the license, and now you have to have somebody perform the ceremony.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's what you did. So that's what you did at the drive-through.
Yeah. Well, poor guy. His armpits were raw from the crutches.
All right.
So swollen. He was cranky.
Who's driving?
Me.
You're in the driver's seat. He's in the passenger seat.
Yeah.
And you guys like hold hands and exchange rings in your Jeep?
In my Jeep. And I still drive that Jeep today.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I didn't get any pic. The only picture I have of our wedding when we were getting married was, and I don't even know where it's at, a picture of him looking all grumpy looking at the papers.
Oh, really? That's the only one? The drive-thru didn't give you a picture of you guys getting married? What the hell?
No. Well, they wanted us to stand outside by this fountain. But, you know, when your air conditioner's out, you're kind of sweaty in your car. You got a grumpy army guy sitting next to you. You forgot the pictures.
And those army guys get grumpy, too.
Oh, his other nickname was the Angry Midget.
There you go. All right, joining us this morning, Carrie Riley. She of Southern California is now a Midwest woman. Went to Kentucky, then currently down in Louisiana, yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
And moved back home after he passed away.
Okay, her husband Sean, who we're talking about, sergeant in the Rangers, and then in the Massachusetts National Guard, and then got out, and we're going to talk about that. Took his own life, and we're going to talk about Carrie's life through that and afterwards. So, if you have a question or comment, you can send a text 714-661-8107, an email to live.allmarineradio@gmail.com, or you can call 714-884-4294 and ask a question. So, Carrie, you guys, he comes back, and you're now married, and you move back to Fort Knox?
Yeah. They medically retired him in July 2010, and he moved me out there to Kentucky in June 2010. So they forced him to medically retire.
Okay, so and why did he have to? What were the conditions that was it his ankle or why did they medically retire?
He had 10 surgeries from the time he got home. He had severe PTSD. He had traumatic brain injury from being blown up. He got blown up like 6 times in a matter of, I think it was 2 to 3 months that he was out there. So he had anger issues. He had double shoulder surgery, hernia surgery, just anxiety, depression.
Right.
So they told him that he, in his words, and this is the only way I can describe it, they told him that he was too broke to play Army. He called it playing Army, and he loved it. And so they medically retired him July 26, 2010.
You know, the sad part is that as you evaluate, you know, military guys, they've got to be, you know, when you evaluate it, it's like, can this guy go back and be full up round is what we would call it. Can he go be a full up round member and go fight again? And when the answer to that is no, it's hard because, you know, it's what they love and they want to do. And but you know, well, nobody has to tell you. The rigors of that life, especially doing what he did, be it a ranger or doing route clearance, that's a pretty, pretty tough existence, and you can't go do it if you're not full up rounds. So, sad day for him, yes?
Yeah, it was horrible.
Okay.
That was everything that he loved to do.
All right, so, you know, we're just talking to Bob Nielsen. I actually married you two, by the way, by confusing your names. I apologize to both of you for doing that.
That's okay.
But Bob was talking about, he said, you know, I meet veterans here, and they're in, you know, a tough place. They don't know what's going to happen to them now. They had, you know, a career or a life, at least in their mind. You know, and for a lot of them, in the blink of an eye, that all changes. And they don't know what's going to happen to them physically. They don't know what's going to happen to their families. And they have all this uncertainty in their life, he said. And so I try to be standing there, you know, for them and say, hey, man, I might have a solution for you if you want to start your own business. You know, and really what he does is he gives them hope, you know, in terms of, oh, okay, I can see myself now how my life's going to be. Talk about Talk about the road that Sean went down after. So he separated from the Army in July of 2010. You guys are now married. What happens after that?
Living in Kentucky. He actually had gotten a job at the Accessions Command at Fort Knox.
Okay.
And he had bad anxiety about it. They were pretty awesome, though. He had bad anxiety about it because what they wanted him to do was more or less like cyber recruiting, where he would get on. He had a Facebook page for the Fort Knox Accessions Command, and he would talk to guys that were just transitioning into the Army. He did that okay because he could do that at home. This was before his PTSD started getting really bad. But then they wanted him to transition into going into the office, where he had to wear, like, nice slacks and nice shoes and, you know, big change from from wearing the uniform or whatever. He took it in stride in the beginning. There was other veterans that were there. He would have to do the computer. And then that's when things started to go bad. He started getting, I don't want to say paranoid because that makes him sound, I don't just make it sound bad.
Right.
He started getting to where he felt that people were watching him because he was making mistakes, even though they weren't. He would ignore that the PTSD was causing issues. He had night terrors and would wake up screaming, didn't want to go to work. He would suck it up, though, and he went. I was working at the time, too. But he started becoming really withdrawn. And he was going to, I think it's called Robley Rex VA out there. He had been going to an Army psychiatrist who he dearly loved because she was awesome. But when he got transitioned out of the Army, they wouldn't let him go there. They made him go to the VA. He didn't like that guy because he didn't feel like he connected with him. Sean was the kind of guy where if he didn't connect with you, he had a hard time talking about things.
You know what? And that's typical for most guys. It's pretty typical when you don't connect with somebody.
Yeah.
You don't go. You just don't do it. And so that's one of the major things that you can't continue to see your active duty, you know, therapist or psychiatrist when you're not on active duty anymore. And it's it's that vulnerable point where you now have to plug into a new system to find somebody new that turns out to be, you know, tremendously critical. Did he ever find anybody on the civilian side at the VA or any place that he felt comfortable talking to?
No, they wouldn't let him go to civilian. He would have to pay for it himself, and we tried to get one, but it was too much money. And the thing about, they gave him a caseworker, which in the beginning, the lady that he had was really nice. But he didn't actually go talk to a psychiatrist. He talked to a caseworker who would, in turn, after the appointment, talk to the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist would prescribe the meds. So he never got to talk to the psychiatrist, which kind of made me angry. So I started to question his appointments because he would come home feeling worse. And then it got to the point where he became really withdrawn. He didn't want to leave the house. He stopped going to work. He ended up quitting the job. Now we had to do go to a Social Security hearing so he could get Social Security, you know, from the Army for being hurt or whatever.
Right.
He won that, and that was horrible because they put him under a microscope. They were trying to make him sound like he was lying about having PTSD when we had it all on paper. I mean, he was diagnosed with it from the Army psychiatrist, but we had it all on paper. And it's just amazing what these guys go through just to get compensation that is owed to them for getting hurt over in Iraq or in Afghanistan or wherever. It's heartbreaking.
And so that in addition to, he's not talking to anybody about the things he feels and all of that either, right? So he's,
no,
other than you,
talk to me.
Okay, other than you.
And then he actually started opening up a little bit because we started to argue.
Right.
And more or less it was him, not really arguing, him lashing out because he was frustrated with them.
He's pissed.
And, oh, he was more than pissed.
Oh, no, well, let me just tell you, it's a byproduct of the experience. I've never been a pissed off guy. I am now. You know, if you and I were out and, you know, let's just say we're talking about this interview and somebody, and we're standing there, you know, maybe walking to a table to go have dinner, and somebody, a guy stands up and bumps you and spills your drink on you. If he doesn't say, excuse me, I'm so sorry. There was a day when I would have said, hey, you know, blah, you know, I'd have said, hey, man, that's, you know, can you, I wouldn't say that anymore.
Oh, no, my husband wasn't like that either.
Oh, no, I mean, you come back and you're pissed and then you layer this other stuff on top of them. And I want to read you a text message. Your fans are chiming in now. you're doing great, Carrie. I love you. Longtime sis, Evita. Who's Evita?
Oh, that's Evita De La Cruz. She's another suicide widow.
Okay. You guys...
I gave you her information.
All right. All right. Well...
She's in California.
Well, you know we love her then. So
awesome.
Evita's listening. She says you're doing great. We're talking to Carrie Riley. She a suicide widow. Is that a term you use?
Suicide widow? Yeah. In the beginning, I really didn't like to talk about it.
Right.
Because there's such a stigma about suicide.
Yeah, the S word.
And, oh, God, I'm telling you. And there's also, like, it's like a rival between the killed in action widows. Not all of them. I don't want to make them all sound bad because they are awesome.
Right.
But there's, you know, just with anything. There's rival with anything.
Right.
But you find in the public, when people find out your husband was killed by suicide or died by suicide, they tend to say he's not a hero or that he doesn't deserve to be honored or recognized or whatever. And that's so wrong. So I now am no longer horrified to say the word suicide. I'm not proud of the fact that he took his life because I think if the VA would have helped him, he'd still be here. But I'm not going to hide the fact that's how he died. And even though he died like that, he was an honorable man. He served 23 years. He gave his life for his country. He got hurt. He came home. They ignored him. He died, you know?
Well, he died of a result of his injuries in combat. And we had an attorney on last week who's an advocate for veterans, for widows who, for whatever reason, either they don't sign up for life insurance. And his argument is very simple. He's not right in his head. That's why she doesn't have a death benefit. And he's not right in his head because of his injuries in combat. They were mental. And he's a very successful lawyer doing that named John Dowd. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, so awesome. And, you know, in fact, Carrie, let me tell you this. One of the things he talked about last week was all the different law schools and law firms that are doing pro bono, free legal work for veterans and their families. So if you know of people that need legal help, give me a call and I can give you, I can email you the list that I have of all these. And that list going up on our website here. Hopefully tonight.
Okay.
And just so you know,
I have a couple of girls actually.
Okay, because there's firms all over the country that are doing that kind of free legal work to help families of whether your husband's alive or not, and get what they deserve. Because sometimes between the VA's bureaucracy, Social Security Administration bureaucracy, you get told no when no is the wrong answer. And the point you made. You know, the whole, my husband was killed in action, mine committed suicide. They're both casualties of the war. One died at home, and one died in a foreign country. But they're both casualties. We're going to take a break. My guest this morning, Carrie Riley, her husband, Sean, took his own life, committed suicide. What year did he wind up committing suicide?
October 16th, 2011.
So a little bit more than a year after you got out.
Yeah.
October 16th,
yeah.
Okay. All right. And we're going to talk about Carrie's life afterwards. We're going to talk about some stuff she's involved in, a project right now called the Save a Warrior Challenge for Suicide Prevention, and more of Carrie Riley from Louisiana. coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. So don't go anywhere. We'll continue with our interview coming up next.
Message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
America, let me tell you about Sergeant Greg Anderson. Served two tours in Afghanistan, Bronze Star and Purple Heart recipient, and unemployed. The unemployment rate among transitioning service members is unacceptably high, much higher than the general population. Veterans are a proven commodity. They're mature, reliable, and hardworking. They deserve a chance to get back to work after serving their country. Do you really want to honor a veteran? Hire one. Go to legion.org/honorveterans to find out how you can help.
Military life is rewarding, but it isn't always easy.
Managing the stress can affect even the strongest warrior.
But I can, I will stay mission ready.
I can, I will
keep my mind and body fit.
Talk to my chaplain.
Seek care early.
Strive for progress, not perfection.
I got this.
I got this.
Take the first step.
There's no better time than now.
Reaching out is a sign of strength. Visit realwarriors.net or call 800-874-2273.
To be fully fit, you have to be physically fit. You also have to be mentally fit.
I wish that more warriors would realize how important it is if you get the psychological support that you need so that you can focus on the rest of your life.
I think it takes strength in order to admit that you have an issue. But it also takes intuitiveness of a friend, a leader, a supervisor to pick up on the signal that the soldier is having issues and needs to seek professional help in dealing with it.
It's also important for the lowest possible levels of leadership to be very supportive in helping their members get the help that they need.
When I went to get help, I had more help than I could ask for from my entire command.
It's sometimes challenging to come to a senior staff member or senior officer in the unit with a problem. There's not a commanding officer out there or a leadership staff out there that doesn't want to help. So don't hesitate. Come ask.
Learn more by visiting www.realwarriors.net or calling 1-866-966-1020.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. It is Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, for those of you who don't know. 9:37 here on the West Coast. I'm joined by Carrie Riley. Carrie, everything all right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Yes. All right. You're doing great, just so you know.
Thank you. I have a couple of my friends messaging me on Facebook that are listening.
All right. How do they think you're doing? How are the early reviews? You doing all right?
Avita told me I was doing great. She said she came into the office to hear me and keep going.
All right. We've talked about, how you guys met, getting married in the drive-thru. And let's talk about the next major event. Sean takes his own life. So he's getting, you're not a big fan of the help he got from the VA. Let's talk about that. What? Medicated but not helped, or how would you characterize it?
Over medicated, not listened to, and pushed aside. They refused to let me continue to go with him to his appointments because he wouldn't really speak out, and I saw the crap that was happening, so I started voicing my opinion, he was telling these people that he wanted to die. He told them every appointment. He had, like, sometimes in the beginning he had 2 appointments a week, and he would tell this lady, I just don't want to wake up. I just want to die. So their thing was, hey, let's give you some Paxil. Let's give you some Ativan. Let's give you some Trazodone to help you sleep on top of all the Ativan or Ambien you're taking. Then, mind you, Sean had chronic pain from all his injuries, so he was on pain meds, which he later became addicted to because the chronic pain got so bad, because on top of all the other stuff. He told them every appointment, he always told them, I don't want to live. I just want to die. And they just ignored him. And it got to the point where I got pissed off, and I said, you got to do something about this. You know, put him inpatient, something. Because he wouldn't put himself in it because right. He was too proud, for one.
Right.
And he was afraid of how people would view him, that he thought people would view him as weak. Because when he was in the warrior transition unit, he had a profile where he couldn't salute because of his shoulders, and he couldn't do PT because of his ankle. But he still went to formation and still did everything, and some of the people there would talk crap. The warrior transition unit is another, don't even get me started on that. But back to the VA, they refused to let me come to his appointments anymore. So, okay, whatever. But I made sure he went to them. And he ended up having to go to some drug counseling because we were trying to get him off of all the pain meds. And it started working probably for about 2 weeks, almost 3 weeks. And then his drug counselor started canceling his appointment. Now, mind you, this is a drug counselor from the VA who works at the VA, Robley Rex or Rex Robley, whatever it's called, in Louisville. Start calling him and canceling. And instead of, you know, because they knew how addicted he was, instead of getting him another counselor to go to maybe the next day or maybe later that day, they just didn't do it. They just canceled. And after probably 2 times of them canceling, he got frustrated and he said, screw it. And I want to say...
So he stopped going.
Yeah. And it had been working. He had been realizing, hey, you know, I have a problem. And it's because the PTSD is so bad, I'm medicating because I don't want to feel anymore. And probably a week after they did the last cancellation, because I had anxiety really bad from when he was in Iraq the first time, and right. So I had been put on Ativan.
Right.
Well, I had to hide them. I found my bottle. It was empty. He had taken 30 of them. This was a week after they're canceling his appointment. And I just thought that he had been sleeping because he was tired. And I got him awake, and I yelled at him. I said, what the hell? What are you doing? And he just started crying. He said, I can't do it anymore. I don't want to anymore. They push me aside. They ignore me. They're not listening to me. They're not helping me. He says, I don't want to go back. And so I got him out of bed, and we got him back to another appointment. And it seemed like things were okay. They weren't better, but they were okay. And, sorry, October 16th, I found him in my living room on my couch. I thought he was sleeping. I touched him. He fell over. Did CPR. And I brought him back. And he looked at me, and he started to cry. And then he just took his last breath in my arm. And then he was gone.
Carrie Riley's our guest here on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio. We're talking about her husband, Sergeant Sean Riley, Ranger, Massachusetts National Guardsman, and veteran of the invasion of Panama, where he jumped into Panama. And also of multiple deployments to Iraq, who, as Terry just told you, took his own life on October 16th of 2011. So let's talk about the aftermath of that, Carrie.
Okay.
So what? How did you deal with that? What do you do?
Well, I had to call the VA to tell him he wouldn't be at his appointment on Monday. And the lady got kind of crappy with me, and I said, because he killed himself. So then they send a card. It was like a Halloween card, because they used to send these stupid little cards for holidays, and they all signed it. So I physically took it down there and kind of lashed out at him. I kind of wish I wouldn't have, because I'm a bigger person than that, but I was just angry that the man told him what he wanted to do, and they ignored him, and he ended up doing it. He overdosed on pain meds because it just got too bearable for him.
And let me ask you, if you could boil your criticism of the VA in this case down to something, what would it be? What's your major problem with the way they treated your husband?
They didn't listen to him.
They didn't listen to him.
And no, they didn't listen to him, and they over-medicated him. When he would say that because he had flashbacks, he had night terrors.
Right.
I woke up a couple times with his hands around my neck because he thought he was in Iraq. When he would tell them that, look, I'm hurting my wife, I don't want to hurt her, they ignored him. Here, take this. Take some trazodone on top of your Ambien. That'll make you sleep deeper. Well, medication is not going to help. And I know it for a fact because I watched my husband. It didn't help him. It made him go into like a zombie state, and then that made him more depressed because he had the desire to get these feelings out, to work them out, and talk about them. Now, he was actually going to the TBI clinic because he had a couple really bad concussions from the times he had been blown up. And he told me, he said, the TBI clinic's a joke. He says, they send you home with a damn packet like homework. He says, I want somebody that's going to sit down and help me understand what the hell is going on in my head. He says, I can't understand it. He says, there's so much crap going on in my head. He says, it would break my heart. He told me, I just want to feel normal. And he said, taking all this medication, not being able to actually talk to the psychiatrist, but talking to some counselor, he said, it's not helping me. I want to be able to do something to help myself, but I don't know what to do. And I think that if they started listening, instead of pushing them aside and ignoring them when they say, hey, I want to die. When someone tells you, hey, I want to die, hello. They don't say it because they want to say it. They say it because that's how they feel. I know that too well. And from all the times that he told them that, they didn't listen.
All right. The number here is 714-661-8107 if you want to send a text, if you want to send an email, live.almarineradio@gmail.com. And if you want to be on the program, 714-884-4294. Carrie, email here. Mac, how is Carrie done in the aftermath? So, Carrie, your husband takes his life. You're there when it happens. Revive him once, and then he dies in your arms. I don't know that you have more traumatic events in your life than that. Hopefully not. So how have you done since then?
The first year, I really don't remember. And I think every widow goes through that. The second year, I didn't care about anything. By the third year, I started to finally care about myself and realize he is gone. Because in the beginning, it kind of just, even though he died in my arms, I guess I convinced myself he was on deployment. Because we went through two deployments together and then a two-year separation. He was home from Iraq in 2008, and we didn't live together till 2010. So, I guess I fooled myself. And then one day, it finally hit me, what the hell am I doing? You know, he would not want me to wallow in my own self-pity or be depressed or, you know. So I started taking care of myself, and I have a friend that Sean had actually deployed with, who helped me realize that I had PTSD. I had it from an abusive relationship before Sean. And then I had actually had seen the Army psychiatrist that he used to go to. And she told me, she called it transferred PTSD, where I adapted to how he was because I became his caregiver in a sense. I did everything for him because he couldn't get out of bed. And he, you know, I did everything.
So you wound up seeing the Army psychiatrist that he liked?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. How did that happen? How did that happen? How was that arranged?
He got me into seeing her. This was before he died.
Oh, okay.
Because his PTSD was affecting me and making my past traumatic experience with the relationship come out.
Okay.
So, and it helped. It helped me to understand what he was going through, and it helped me to help him.
All right. So now let's talk about. So now you're in the third year after he passes away. So that's what, 2014.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so
and I reconnected with an old boyfriend who I live with now. I've been living here since 2012.
Okay.
He's a former medic in the Army. I have put myself into school. I'm in my third year of school. I'm going to school to become an RN because my ultimate goal is to work at the VA hospital. That I promised Sean when he was alive, actually, I was enrolled in nursing school. But my dad came and got me out of Kentucky because I didn't know anybody there.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't go. But I promised I promised him that I would do that. So I have 18 months left till I become a nurse. My ultimate goal is to get a job at the VA to help. I mean, even if it's just a little bit of help, every little bit helps. I want to show the guys and the girls that you do matter. That you're not going to be pushed under the rug, or, you know, you're not going to be ignored. I have also become a battle buddy, which anybody can do. You can go with 22 kill. I don't know if you've heard of 22 kill.
I have not.
It's there. You can go to 22kill.com. It's a network of, there's a map where there's veterans advocates, say you live in Louisiana and you're having a hard time, you're a veteran, and you know about 22 Kill and you need somebody to talk to, you can pull up this map, find somebody in your area, and you can call them. Because we all know that the VA crisis lines are not working as great as they should. We just had a guy, Drew Winkler, that passed away. I don't know if you heard about that.
Well, you know what? I think the story is he didn't pass away. And that's,
no, Drew Winkler did. There, Drew Winkler was put on hold on the VA. The other guy is
you know
Todd Knightley.
You know the story I'm talking about, right? That they said that he. Anyway, that aside, you know those hotlines certainly have their problems. And so the 22 kill is it the number 22? Do you spell out 22?
Yeah, it's 222kill.com.
.com.
Yeah, great group of people. And then I also am involved with one of my widow sisters. Her name is Melissa Jarbo. She started Military Veteran Project. She also has, it's called Save a Warrior Challenge.
Okay.
And that's what I'm involved with right now. I have a fundraising page where the Save a Warrior Challenge, what they're doing is they're trying to raise funds to help with research for veteran suicide to figure out what we can do to help our veterans.
Right. And so how do people support the Save a Warrior Challenge?
There's a Facebook page.
Okay.
It's called Save a Warrior Challenge.
All right. So all you got to do is go to Facebook and search Save a Warrior Challenge, and their page will come up.
Yes. And then there's directions on the page. You can click for the Military Veteran Project homepage.
Okay.
And then you can either do the challenge where it's, Melissa has it to where you can do 22 of anything. Like, you can challenge your friends. It's to get people involved and get awareness out. Challenge your friends to do 22 exercises of something or 22 of something. Or you can actually do a fundraising page. Which I have a fundraising page.
Okay.
And it's awesome. They're trying to raise funds to help prevent military suicide through research and treatment. Great organization.
All right. Now, I've got a text message here. Mac, could you ask Carrie to talk about 22 kill again? I joined you kind of in the middle of your discussion. Are they people that we can call when we don't get through on a hotline or we get frustrated? Could we call them at any time? Could she explain it?
Yes.
So explain 22
yes.
kill.
22 kill, they are, I'm pulling up their webpage so I can read it directly and not mess it up. It's a global movement bridging the gap between veterans and civilians to build a community of support. They're veteran run, veteran founded, amazing people. It's founded by
I just got to their website.
Yeah. Yeah, Sean's actually in that video that pulled up. Sean's in that video.
Okay.
They have a veteran advocate map that pulls up people who have signed up. There's actually veterans who are veteran advocates. I'm a battle buddy because I have not been through combat, and you know, there's certain things that I don't know to talk about. And you wear an honor ring on your trigger finger, on the right index finger. And the website tells you exactly everything about it. I'm walking in, like I wear my ring to school, and actually this actually happened to me. I had a guy, because out here in Louisiana, there's a lot of soldiers that go to a community college. And this guy walked up to me, and he said, "You know about 22 kill?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And I said, "Are you okay?" And we talked. He was having a bad day, felt out of place because he had just started back at school, just gotten home, and separated from the Army, felt out of place. And he just said, it makes me feel comfortable knowing that you understand what I'm going through, and that I know if I need somebody, I can find you and talk to you." Gave him the website, and if you pull up the veteran advocate map, there is a huge network of people who have signed up to be advocates, and their phone numbers are there with them. If you look on the map, you click on the ring. It has the person's name, has what city they're in, has their phone number. Now, I'm in under Lafayette, Louisiana, Broussard, actually. If there's somebody out here that 2 o'clock in the morning you need to talk, call my phone number. I'll listen. And if I can't help you, I will find somebody who can help you and direct you to somebody who can help you better than what I can. If you just need to talk because you're having a crappy day, then talk, you know. It's an amazing, amazing website.
I've got a final question for you, Carrie, here that's from an email. Mac, what advice does Carrie have for other widows? My cousin is a widow from Afghanistan. Sometimes she's doing well, sometimes she's not. We all struggle with what we can do to help. Is there any advice that Carrie would give us? Is there any thing that we should be doing to help, and what advice would she give my cousin? So
when I first became a widow, everybody, and it happens, I guess, when anybody dies, people want to comfort you, they want to tell you, you know, it'll be okay. And as well-meaning as that is, and I don't mean to sound disrespectful to anybody that has ever helped me, telling a widow, "Well, at least he's in a better place," that's no. Because the better place would be here with me. My advice is just listen. If she wants to talk about him and talk about the fun times or even cry, let her cry. Because it'll be 5 years in October that he's gone. And I'm in a wonderful, loving relationship with a man who's very supportive. But I still have those days, and I still go to grief counseling, where I don't want to do anything, and people just let me talk about him. Like, talking about him with you is very therapeutic. one thing that I had to learn was not to get stuck in my grief. And it's very hard to not get stuck in your grief. And I'm also an administrator in a military suicide widow group in Facebook. And I talk a lot to the girls, and I remind them, don't get stuck in your grief. It's okay to grieve. It's okay to cry. It's okay if you need to take a day where you need to lay around and not do anything. But the next day, get up. There's days where I don't want to get up. I don't want to go do anything. On those days, I make myself go work out. I go do CrossFit. I do CrossFit because it challenges my mind, and it helps me to get rid of feeling bad where I don't want to do anything and crawl in that hole. Because for a year, when Sean was home, I lived in that darkness like he did. And so I know it's very hard to get away from that. And I struggle every day with going back to that darkness. But my thing is, if you're a widow, just take it one day at a time. Sometimes you got to take it one second at a time, but just keep going because that's all you can do.
Okay, what do family, what, for instance, an extended family member that's close enough to, if they're not doing the things that you talked about, you know, and physical activity, you and I both know, it's good for your brain. It's good for your body. It's probably better for your brain because it gets you moving. It gets you back involved in life and it keeps your body moving. What advice, if somebody's concerned, do you sit on a talk? If you see them, you know, in a prolonged period where, you know, they're having a tough time, what do family members do?
What my mom did with me and what my dad did with me, they would talk to me about John.
Okay.
Now, I've lost a lot of friends because I did go into that dark place where I did try to take my life. And I did live in the grief. They couldn't understand how to help me, so they would try to tell me, just get over it. Suicide is something you never get over. You learn to live with it, and it stings a little less. But what makes it easier to handle, and because when you are going through the whole suicide thing, you also worry about, well, God, my family doesn't understand because they're trying to tell me to snap out of it, or they're trying to tell me, just get up. My advice to a family member is if you have somebody who's lost somebody to suicide or even just a regular death, killed in action, whatever, sit with them and talk to them. Talk to them about how they feel. Talk to them about their loved one, because my mom used to sit for hours and talk about Sean with me, and my dad too. And it helps. It helps to know that they're not forgotten. And when you feel like you are being listened to, it kind of boosts you up in a sense,
right?
You know, because when I felt like I was just, like I had people tell me, just get over it. It just made me go deeper and deeper into that dark place. I felt like nobody understood. But when somebody takes the time to sit with you, or, hey, let's just go to the park, or, hey, let's just go to the beach and listen to the waves. And see, that's what I did a lot too. I went to the beach when I lived in California.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very therapeutic. Just getting them out, going for a car ride,
the best
not
day
forcing
ever.
Them to, not forcing somebody to interact socially, because it took me 2 years to interact socially. I mean, I would go for car rides or I would go to the beach or whatever, but to be put in an instance where, hey, we're going to go to this party, you're going to go with us? No. Just talk to them.
Let me just tell you, the advice I got the first time that I had a horrible experience. A gunnery sergeant in the Marine Corps, so an E-7. I told this story last week, but he walks up to me and he says, and a helicopter crashed inside of my company assembly area. Four Marines are killed, you know, trying to save, you know, two of them, and it didn't work, and so it's just this horrible, intimate experience that you go through. And he walked up to me at the end of the day, and he asked me how I was doing. And I said, I don't know. I haven't really had a chance to think about it. And he looked at me, and he said, you know you're never going to get over this. And you know what? Probably the best advice anybody's ever given me in my life. Because what it prepared me for was that it was going to bother me forever. And that it was it was okay because I was a human being. And, you know, I'm not getting over it. And then in 1996, my sister's two sons, 4 and 6 years old, were murdered by their father. He shot them both in the head because he was going to leave her. She was going to leave him with the boys. And so he shot both boys and then killed himself. And, I mean, horrific, right? So, but the things people say when they don't know what to say, God needed him more than, you know, you did. He's in a better place now. The hardest steel goes through the hottest fire. There's a purpose in this. You may not see it now, but there's a purpose in this. You know, you hear that stuff, and you just want to scream. And so just don't say that kind of stupid shit, you know? Just go up and give
him a... God had a plan.
Yeah,
my favorite that used to piss me off was God had a plan. You know what? No, God's plan, whatever, was for me to marry my best friend, and now he's gone. Like you said, go up and hug somebody. Just a hug goes a long way.
Don't say that
stuff. That's why I got involved with the Save a Warrior Challenge, because I want to help. I want to help somebody not have to go through what I did.
Okay, so bottom line.
It makes me cry.
Oh, I'll tell you what. When I used to hear that stuff, you know, I hear, and I'm not the biggest Bible quoter in the world, but I hear that line from the Bible, you know, that Jesus said, Father, forgive them for they know not what they do. These people have never been in your position. They don't know what you feel. They don't know what you feel like. They don't know anything close to it. That's why they say it.
They're well-meaning,
right?
You know,
but when you're on the receiving end of it and you feel what you feel and you think about what they say, it just drives you crazy. But bottom line, so Carrie, so to answer the question, so as a family member, if you're concerned, you know, go try to do something with them. Just listen to them. Go have fun.
Yeah,
go have fun with
them.
Hug them.
Walk up and hug them. Don't say stupid crap. Like, as well-meaning as it is, don't say the stupid crap, God had a plan or he's in a better place.
Here's the best one. You need to get over it.
Yeah, you don't get over that shit. Sorry.
Yeah. No.
And I'm still not over it. You know.
Well, and, you know, but that's because you're never going to get over it. And that's the truth, that they don't know that. And so they say that, again, well-intentioned, but it's what you deal with, right? Why can't I get over this? Well, the truth is, you're not getting over it. You know?
No, because it makes you question everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, I to this day, I question everything. I've gotten better to where I don't question my relationship and, you know, worry that, oh, my God, something's going to happen. Because I have abandonment issues now because of what happened. And so when you're questioning everything, you don't need somebody harping on you, get off your ass, get up, go do this. If I want to lay on my butt and watch TV because I'm having a day, let me do that. And just if somebody sees me getting stuck in my grief, ask me, are you okay?
Right.
Talk about them. Don't talk about their loved one. Talk about them. Because I lost myself in his grief, in this grief with him, because everybody wanted to talk about him. Nobody really started talking about me until I started saying, what about me? What the hell? And just talk to them about them. Ask them, are you okay? Hug them. I'm telling you, people would have come up and hugged me, and it helped. And they say a 20-second hug releases chemicals that help.
A 20-second
really
hug?
Does.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Carrie Riley has been our guest here in the second hour of a Monday version of All Marine Radio. Carrie, first of all, I want to thank you for coming on and talking about your story. People that are interested in being advocates for veterans and involved in suicide, 22kill.com, yes?
Yes, and Military Veteran Project.
Okay.
.org.
All right, and then you're...
And then you can also find the Military Veteran Project on Facebook and also Save a Warrior Challenge on Facebook.
All right. And then go ahead.
Veteran Suicide Awareness Project is my widow sister, Evita's. She's on Facebook also.
Okay.
And they just did a 40-mile ruck for veteran suicide.
So
all amazing, amazing people.
VeteranSuicideAwareness.org?
No, it's Veteran Suicide Awareness Project, and it's on Facebook.
Oh, on Facebook. Okay. All right. Well, first of all, thank you very much for coming on. And, you know, just want to say all the best of luck to you. And we're certainly rooting for you. And we know you're never going to get over it, but we hope you continue to make great strides in living with it. And he would certainly be proud of you.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Carrie, thanks for the visit.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. That is...
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That is Carrie Riley. Tough stuff. More of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Coming up next.
Military life is rewarding, but it isn't always easy.
Managing the stress can affect even the strongest warrior.
But I can. I will stay mission ready.
I can. I will
keep my mind and body fit.
Talk to my chaplain.
Be there to listen.
I can. I will.
Know the signs.
Seek care early.
Talk to my healthcare provider. Be there to help, listen, and get you through this.
I can, I will motivate others.
Strive for progress, not perfection.
I can, I will be there for my buddies, no matter what.
Be there for our veterans, no matter what.
And I've got your back, too.
I can, I will keep our family safe while you're away.
I can, I will think of you every night.
We're in this together.
I got this.
I got this.
I got this.
Take the first step.
There's no better time than now.
Reaching out is a sign of strength. Visit realwarriors.net or call 800-874-2273.
We were rolling down this road in
Anbar Province.
Three personnel carriers
with 16 of us on board.
All of a sudden,
there's a huge explosion.
We knew right away.
It was an IED. The first vehicle
got wasted. And those guys took
a huge hit.
Then we started taking
sniper fire and RPGs from the hills.
In today's military, women face the same dangers as men.
It's pretty amazing.
We made it out alive.
But when they come home, women veterans confront a whole different set of challenges, like unique health care issues, or not receiving respect or even acknowledgement for serving in harm's way. DAV understands the problems women veterans face, and we can help. Many DAV advisors are female veterans. They've been there, and they're ready to provide expert guidance. DAV fights to get you the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help.
As we recognize the service of America's men and women in uniform, let's also honor the families who sacrifice so much every day. Military families endure frequent deployments and separations. They carry on while their loved ones are sent into harm's way and wait patiently for their safe return. If you really want to honor a veteran, look for ways to support their families and thank them for their sacrifices. Go to legion.org/honorveterans to find out how you can help.
I had PTSD. Once I was back from Iraq, I was distant from everybody in my family.
We had a reunion of our unit, and you'd hear these spouses say, "Is your husband doing that? My husband's doing that too. I thought it was just us." And really understanding that, hey, this is a common experience.
I learned more to listen to what he was saying, and that made it easier for me to understand where his pain was coming from.
Resources are available for military families. Learn more at realwarriors.net.